So now we take up the discussion of Hasocher Sachamor Omesa Bechatzi Haderech. Kol should be happy because Kol is the Hana man, and Hana features prominently in this discussion. We have the Gemara B'Metziah in Tesamet Aleph. The Gemara tells us Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Hasocher Sachamor Lirchol V'Leo Omesa Bechatzi Haderech. You hire a donkey to travel to take you from New York to Boston, and it dies halfway, so you only get to Rhode Island. No sein lo schar, scharo shel chatzi aderech. So you gotta pay the schar for the trip from New York to Rhode Island, even though you wanted to get to Boston. Okay. The Gemara says, ein lo olav taromes, ein lo olav ela taromes, all you have is a grievance. Hechi dami, why do you have a grievance? If it's easy to get a hitch from, or get another ride from Rhode Island to Boston, why do you even have a grievance, right? You got halfway, you're picked up a minute later by another Uber driver. You shouldn't even have a grievance. It didn't really set you back. If you're stuck in Rhode Island and you can't get to Boston, why do you even have to pay him for half of the derech? Right, you didn't get anything out of it, right? He didn't get you to the destination to which you desired to get to. So you shouldn't have to pay him anything. The Gemara answers, La'olam de lo shchiach lo gurei. Really, yes, you are stuck in Rhode Island. Nevertheless, you have to pay. Mishum de amar le ilubas lamaisi ad hacha, lav agra bais lamesav. You know, the donkey owner has this counterclaim where he can say, look, had you wanted to get to Rhode Island, I provided a legitimate service of getting you here, and so you should have to pay me at least for that. Very cryptic answer that the Gemara offers. So what do you think of the Gemara's Maskana here? Just before we get to the Tosos comments, how do you understand the Gemara's Maskana Kipshuto?
Isn't pro rata. He's paying him for the work that he's done.
Yeah, you're paying him for the work that he did, but it's surprising because he didn't get you to where you hired him to get you to, right?
Yeah, it implies that the contract, like, it doesn't seem like it's an all or nothing contract. It seems that there's some that the compensation has at least can manifest in like smaller increments.
Yeah, very good. It's like the Einstein theory of contracts, right? It's there are these discrete. No, I'm just kidding. Well, yes, I think you know you're exactly right to say that the fundamental question here is whether we say, look, he didn't provide the job that he was hired for, and so he shouldn't get anything. Or can you say, yes, he didn't provide the job he was hired for, but he provided some service, and so that's to be sufficient to entitle him to some compensation. Now, the problem is the Gemara's language itself suggests that even if he didn't benefit at all, right, the fact that he provided some objective market service of getting someone, you know, what's the market value of getting somebody from New York to Rhode Island, right? Regardless of whether he conferred a benefit upon you, he's still entitled to be paid for conferring that market service. Tosfos doesn't like that at all, and Tosfos insists that it's only reasonable to force the renter to pay if he receives some legitimate hana from getting to Rhode Island. Here's Tosfos' formulation. Tema, dehashtam yalavad hacha bahi lemaisi, lama yitin lo schar. I wanted to get to Boston, why should I have to pay for getting to Rhode Island? V'yishlomar, dehadika amar, Le'olam de'lo shchiach lo gure, haynu lefi osan damim shehiskir mizeh. Aval betvei porta yimtza lahaskir, v'harei nene b'mashe ba'adkan lekach nosein lo chatzi scharo. Anybody want to tell us what Tosfos' position is in this answer? So what's his theory?
It's very simple. He's just paying for that which he was nene.
Yeah, so you're paying because you got some benefit, right? Meaning, yes, you'll have to shell out a little extra cash. Meaning, had you gone straight from New York to Boston, it would have cost you $100. Now it's going to end up costing you $125 altogether, including the second leg of the trip. But you got some benefit from getting halfway, and so you got to pay for that service. And you don't get a deduction for the fact that there was some onus, right? You don't get a deduction for only getting to Rhode Island. Ve'in tzarach lifchos hamasker mischaro, mash ze nosein. Kivan dehu onus. You know, since this is really, there's no fault at all of the maskir, he doesn't get any reduction in his salary. So he gets paid the full value of half the trip that he conferred. Okay. Inami, Tosus gives another suggestion. Kigon she yuchal limkor scharasa b'makom shemesa chamor v'yar v'yachba. V'yesh sochem harbe she'en mevi'in scharasa nela adkan l'kach yiten chatzi scharo. Yeah, you intended to sell your wares at the Boston market, but hey, a lot of people go to the Rhode Island market, so you could just as well benefit, or you could at least benefit in some way by selling at the Rhode Island at market. And so you got, I guess, I think it is another way of saying that you got some hana from the service that was provided. So I think it's two ways of making the same point. But I think the chiddush here in Tosvos, against the simple reading of the Gemara, is that the duty to pay for half the trip is contingent on your getting some hana from the service. The Rashba, again, makes a similar point. So there's just three ways of making the same point. The Rashba 9 Tesamet Aleph, he says, you know, Tamiyali, Hage Ba'atzmacha, Shemesa Baderech Ba'midbar, Makam Gedude Listin V'chayos, Mi Amarle Yulu Bois Lamesi Ad Hacha. He's saying, well, you know, imagine you're traveling through the desert. So, you know, you're traveling through the Sahara to get to Morocco. I think I got that right. And you get stuck in the middle of the desert, you know, so the guy could charge you for half the trip after he strands you in Nowheresville. That can't be. And so the Rashba says, of course it can't be. Umistavali delav delo mishtarshi le klal ka'amar. If there was no benefit conferred at all, then of course you wouldn't have to pay. Ella de lo mishtarish le lemasha hala she hala bidaito ka'amar. Really, it just means that you didn't get the exact benefit that you wanted from the trip. Now you got to travel from New York to Boston in two legs, in two separate trips, but you still got some benefit. Chugon ze shahaya bidaito leholech maso leparvaso leyoma de shuka. But there are lots of people who end up taking this break at the hotel along the way. You know, you could either get a direct flight or an indirect flight, but even the indirect flight confers some sort of benefit. Here he says, for example, but if you're not getting any benefit from this, you're stuck mamish in the midbar, then of course you wouldn't have to pay anything. So you have your three separate formulations of the idea that there's some fundamental connection between you're getting a benefit from the service and your duty to pay for the partial performance. Any comments on just that theory of Tosis and the Rashba?
Yeah, is it so clear that the Rashba is saying exactly what Tosis is saying? Because the Rashba... the Rashba doesn't necessarily... I'm not sure the Rashba is necessarily saying you need a benefit, just that there needs to be some market value for the portion, for what was accomplished. And there's in the examples he gives in the question, there's just no market value for you for taking a spina in the middle of the ocean and then drowning.
Interesting. There's
no market value for taking a chamor to the middle of the desert and then stopping. But as long as there's as long as there's some value, that seems to be a weaker condition than Tosos's Nehenda.
Good. So that's a nice point. I would push back, and I think the formulation of Mishtar Shile, I think Mishtar Shile is that you received some benefit. Not sure if you encountered that formulation elsewhere. So I think the formulation of like Lishtarish, like it's something accrues to you. So I think when he says El de lo mishtarish le lamasha hala bidaita o kamar, he's saying that something, you must have gotten something from this, just that you didn't get the thing that you wanted.
Right, so I would say that
fits with what I said, that there is some market value. You did get some market value out of this. It just wasn't at all what you want. It wasn't at all what you wanted, and it has no relation to your original plans. Whereas Tosas is Hanaha seems to be a stronger formulation.
Could be. Still, I think that, let's see. Well, look, if you read, I read Mishdar Shile as being synonymous with Hana. V'aklal she'afal pishena mishdarish lo achshav, mishdarish lo lemachar. Right, even if you're not getting the right benefit today from being dropped off in Rhode Island, you'll get the benefit tomorrow of being able to travel from there to Boston. So maybe we're disagreeing about how to interpret Mishdar Shile Yakir. You think even within my interpretation of Mishdar Shile as getting benefit, you still think you could reduce it to just there being some objective market value?
We're probably disagreeing about how to interpret Mishdar Shile, probably.
Yeah, so let's look. What we should do is we should look in other areas, see how that phrase is used. Mishdar Shile. My sense from like these Surei Hanah Sugyas and Psachim is that it's used to talk about you're receiving a benefit. But it's Milsa Dafshar Levar when we look into it. So why don't we do that?
Yeah. I think that you're right. I also think just the actual counterexample itself. Like the example is a case where you'll go the next day and sell your wares the same way. It's not that objectively speaking, this has some monetary value.
So yeah.
It'll be useful to you tomorrow.
Yeah. I think that's what the last line implies as well. And even Yakir's point... Go on, Yakir.
Yeah, I'm just confused because his question is too weak. He shouldn't just be bothered by these cases where... He shouldn't just be bothered by these cases where there's no market value at all. He should also be bothered by cases where there is a market value, but there's no Hana.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, there's a kind of asymmetry in the way he puts the question forward.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kier, your reading of the Rashba is... Conceptually, you could get that out of the Rambam. Remember, the Rambam in Tzchiras Perakei Halacha Beis, kind of like the Rambam... throughout this whole sugya, just interprets the Gemara Kipshuto. It's a recurring theme in Asocher Asomnim, right? The Rambam really doesn't contribute much to the discussion. Here he just says, if the animal dies and you can't buy a new one, no thing lo scharo shel chatzi aderech ve'ein lo alav elo taromes. So Rambam just records the Gemara straight in a straightforward reading. That you gotta pay for half the way. The Rambam doesn't qualify it by saying, on the condition that you received some hana from the service. He just says, animal dies halfway, you gotta pay for half the service. The Gra is explicit about this diak in the Rambam, the Gra in Simen Shin Yosef Katan Tes. He says, Tosos requires that you need to get some hana from the service. Aval Rambam mefarish kipshuta de Gemara. L'chein hishmita. The Rambam reads the Gemara in this straightforward way that requires you to pay even without receiving a benefit. So Yakir, I think that's a way of getting to the shita that you were reading into the Rashba, that it's the fact that he provided you with a service that has value on the market that demands compensation, that justifies his right to compensation, regardless of whether you received any benefit from his service. Right, Yakir?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Good. And that's a tension. You can see in the Simen Shin Yud Tzif Beis, the Mechaber uses the language of the Rambam, and the Rama adds in, Right, so the Rama is working within Tosis' framework that you need to get Hana you have to confer a benefit in order to justify your right to compensation. Now I think here if Zolti was here, I think he would push us and ask, what's the basis for this partial compensation? Are you paying for the hana? Or it's like a quantum Merowit theory. Or are you paying for half the contract on condition that you receive some benefit from partial performance? Right, so is this a contractual basis of compensation or like a quasi shekenene basis for compensation? In the sugyas itself, it's not, I don't think there's a clear answer one way or the other. I'll just point out, I don't think I copied this here. Let's see. The Pisrei Choshen, not in the part that I copied onto our source sheet, says that you just prorate the contract for the amount that he did. L'chora, that implies that he's being paid based off partial performance under the agreement, because if he was being paid on some theory of hana, it sounds like you should probably only pay for the amount of hana that you got. Right, which may not be the same always as the prorated amount of the performance of the agreement. Okay.
One doesn't have to be implicit in Tosfos's note that you don't have to deduct. If you're calculating the amount of hana he got, wouldn't you have to deduct the amount extra he's going to have to pay to finish the job?
Meaning, if it was the actual hana, then it should be net hana. And the net hana would be offset by the tircha of having to wait or something, or how much you're paying.
I was wondering about that myself.
Yeah. So you're saying it's clear from that the mechayiv, literally, you're not paying for the bestowal of hana. That's a way of being mechayev you for partial performance of the agreement. Yeah, I think that's a good raya. I agree with that, Diak, 100%.
Although it could be that there wouldn't be a need. Right, the Balei Tosfos don't say that you would have to comp the guy for the time left over. Right.
What's that?
Balei Tosfos don't say that you'd have to comp the guy, that the rentor, sorry, that's not a good word. What are we calling the guy that who owns the donkey, who's renting it out?
We could just call him the owner or the maskir.
Fine, okay. I think the correct common law term is rentor, but it sounds too much like mentor in our accents. So the owner of the donkey, nobody says the owner of the donkey has to. That's Yakir's inference, right? Or it's his, right? Yakir, that was your...
What was my inference exactly?
Lekach nose lo chatzi scharo is what the renter is paying. Right, Itamar?
Yeah, the renter is paying chatzi schar, right?
Right, right, yeah. So, I think because it's anus, like, it doesn't make any... It doesn't make much sense to say that the owner would have to comp for lost time. It makes much more sense in the Sfina case. I think the idea here is that like they're it's not a loss; it's a foregone gain, and it's and he's not culpable for it. Like the guy's better off. I think it's fair to say. That's the intuition. There's and as long as you're better off, then you've gotta pay. If like, you know, I mean, imagine, so here's a case where I think the intuition breaks down. Imagine that you have to get from the Shire to Mordor, okay? And your donkey breaks down in the mines of Moria.
You're stopping by Montauk?
Right. No. It's out of the way. So there I would say I do think there could be cases. I think
we gotta get Yair to change his background. Oh, he did. Nice.
What is he? Is he Ir in Middle Earth?
Well, look at his background.
Oh wow, the Balrog. Okay, all right. Yeah. So if, you know, if the donkey breaks down at the Bridge of Casa Doom, okay, I think you
Cole's have, got Cole has Moira Dick and Bacchius over here.
You have serious, you have a serious complaint to lodge. The idea here is that, you know, it's just from one end of the Shire to the other, and it's beautiful, and you're not gonna be harmed by the donkeys breaking down. I think that parallels, by the way, the discussion about Skiris Pollen, where we're much harsher on workers for Davra Avud than we are for just like withdrawal. I think here by the way, the Sphina case, what differentiates that is that like the ship sinks. Like, yeah. you lose what's on board. Here, the donkey takes you 5 miles instead of 10 miles and then goes and has a drink.
Right.
That's the idea. Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. So, Cole, another way of saying what you're saying is, you're saying that you're still getting some clear benefit, right?
100%.
But there's
the benefit isn't defeated. The important thing is this. The benefit is not defeated. You'd be getting benefit anyway. But the benefit is not defeated, to use the, I'll send everybody, Roderick Chisholm's paper on, classic paper on defeating, as opposed to just balancing out goods, important paper in moral philosophy.
Classic indeed.
The benefit's not defeated by any costs. If the benefit were defeated by costs, I think we would have a different story. That's the Sphinx story.
Yes, that's what the Pisgei Choshen says here.
Is that right? I didn't see him.
You can see here, he says, right? So your second leg of the journey is a little more expensive. Right? If the second leg of the journey from Rhode Island to Boston again becomes so expensive, then it totally defeats the Hana, right? Lo Mikri Nene, Velo Nizbar Shia Rav Ma'ab. After Shim HaYoker Hu Ad Kede HaRevach, Sheyarviach Bishora Hare Shiv Lo Nene. So he has this cost-benefit analysis, right? If you end up gaining nothing at the end of the day, then you don't benefit at all from this extra leg of the journey. And then you would totally defeat the Hana and you wouldn't have to pay. I think that makes sense. Okay. I want to raise one other point within the Pisgei Choshen. I thought this is an illuminating suggestion from the Dvar Avram. He quotes the Dvar Avram in Chelek Aleph Simen Mem. The idea that we don't pay for the second half of the route, right? The Gemara here is assuming you only pay for the first half. So suppose the socher, the renter, is at fault for some reason, for the animal dying. Even if the donkey, the renter, is not strictly speaking liable to compensate the owner for the death of the donkey or the loss of the donkey, still chayav l'shalim schar kol haderech shebishvil pshiyaso ein habaylim tzarech lahafsid scharo. So he's saying here that if the reason, the way I understand this, is that if the reason for the donkey's dying is attributable to the renter, then the renter has to pay out the whole contract, not just half the contract. Even if, from the laws of Shomrim liability, the renter is not liable to pay for the damage. Does everybody see that interesting idea? So what I think he's suggesting here is that if for some reason the contract cannot be completed for reasons flowing from the renter, he was poshea in some way, then he's got to pay out the rest of the contract to the owner. I think that's a nice suggestion for the Dvar Avram. Nothing to do with actual liability for replacing the animal, but whether you have to pay for the whole journey will depend in part on whether you're at fault for the animal dying halfway through. Does everybody see that suggestion? Anybody have comments on it? The idea of the Dvar Avram? Yeah. This. Yeah. Anybody have thoughts? Does that make sense to you guys? More or less. Okay. You'll see. There's one other formulation of this idea, similar in a similar vein, brought up in the Pesach Choshen. Suppose niskalkel masa'o shel asocher afilu ba'ones. Yesh omrim shebchol ofen chayev l'shalem lo schar aderech shehalach. So suppose you have this Uber guy who's driving you from New York to Boston, and then midway through, the special wares that you were going to sell in Boston break, right? For no fault of the Uber driver. And so you have no reason to get to Boston anymore, and you say, let me out in Rhode Island. You would have to pay him the schar of the entire journey, since you're the one who's the reason for terminating the contract in the middle. So there you'd have to pay out, the rest. So I think both of these ideas are versions of the idea that if the socher is at fault for stopping midway, that does not excuse him from, doesn't release him from the contract of paying out the rest of it. And you see the Pesach Choshen attributes this idea to the Nesivos that we saw earlier, that if there's an ones to the Baal HaBayis, he's got to pay out the full schar, afal pi shelo nene. V'hachanami mishalim avor haderech shehalach. All right. Good. Now, one small comment here that I don't want to get into in our discussion, it's not necessary for the loss allocation discussion, is there's interesting distinctions here between Chamor Zeh and Chamor Stam. I don't know if did anybody go into that in close detail. It's not really so important for our purposes because that's Schiras Metaltalin. But just whether there's a Hofeldian duty on the owner to replace the item, the Chamor that dies midway through, will depend on whether the contract was formulated as Chamor Zeh or Chamor Stam. We don't have to worry about that right now. What I think is important for our discussion of loss allocation is the following question that's posed by the Rishonim. So you'll notice that what's the rule when it comes to the Chamor Shemes Be'emtza HaDerech? So just very regal achas, what's the rule? Yair, what's the rule?
I'm sorry, in what case?
Yeah, in the Chamor Shemes B'chatzi HaDerech. What's the rule?
The rule is that you pay a chatzi schar. If you could meaningfully say that you gained some benefit from,
Tosfos.
Yeah. I buy into Tosfos.
Exactly. Assuming you benefited from Tosfos, on Tosfos' view, assuming you benefited, you pay chatzi derech. On the Rambam's view, even if you didn't benefit, you pay chatzi derech, right? Because it has a market value. Now, the Rishonim here point out that the rule, at least on some reads, the rule in Schiras Batim is somewhat different. When it comes to Schiras Batim, there are some views that think that you pay out the entire contract even if you only benefited for half of it. So you rent a house and the house gets destroyed midway through. You're still going to pay out for the entire rental period even though you only benefited for half of it. So here's that discussion in the Rishonim, and we'll see how they reconcile it with the sugya of Chamor, where you only pay for half. So you have a Gemara in Bava Metzia, Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, Hamasker bayis lechaver benafal, chayv lahamid lo bayis acher. But the Gemara says, if it was a bayis zeh, you said, I'm just renting you this house, nafal azale. Then the baal bayis, the owner doesn't have to replace it. The tenant is messed over. The Ramban here says, the tenant only has to pay for the time that he actually was able to use the house. Of course, the tenant's not going to pay for the time that the house is unusable. So imagine I rent a house for a year, the house falls down 6 months in. According to the Ramban, I pay 6 months of rent. Pirus v'nosein lo schirus yamim shedarbo le'in lahem zal zeklam. You pay for the time that you live there, not a day more. Mordechai makes a similar point. The Mordechai says, let's see. Yeah. Masker bayis lechavero v'nisraf b'soch hazman. You lease a house and the house gets burnt down. So the homeowner is considered to be the one who's breaching.
Did you just put this on the... Sorry, am I missing something? When did you put this on?
Either last night. Probably last night I added this.
Oh, fine. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. I just didn't see... I learned for the chabur. I just didn't see it.
Yeah. But I'll explain it now quite as clearly as possible. And so the Mordechai says, basically, even if you prepaid in advance, the tenant is only liable for the duration that he actually lived there, that he benefited from it. The balabayis is considered to be the reason for withholding the agreement because he's not providing the house that he was obligated to provide. Okay? But you still have to pay him for the time that you live there. Based off the Chamor case, Mishim Dehacha, Matsuyamar Le Maskir, Ilu Bois Lemegrad, Hacha Lab Agra Bois Lemesav, Hilkach Tzarach Litin Tzara Yam Shadarbo. Just like in the donkey case, you pay for the route, you pay for the trip to Rhode Island, so too in the house case, you pay for the months that you live there. So both according to the Ramban and the Mordechai, and you'll see this is the position of the Rush, Yitin Lo Tzara Hamagia Adzman Hanafila, they all think that there is this direct correspondence between the donkey rental and the home rental. You pay for the time that, for the partial performance. Okay. Problem is that there's a range of Rishonim who disagree. Tagos Ashri, for example, says, well, Mesap Galim Chayev Litain Lo Kol Haschi Rosim Lav. He's actually Mesupak, and he thinks that maybe even if the house burns down, the tenant would have to pay out the entire year term, not just the 6 months that he lived there. The Agos Ashri says this also in our sugya on Perek Vav, in Perek Vav Simen Yud. He says, "Umashma hasam," the implication of the house falling case is denosein lo kol haschiros, is that you pay out the entire contract, even for the 6 months you didn't live there. Mechein mashma milashon Rashi the pirish mazalo gorem. He thinks you could get that out of Rashi on Kuf Gimel, where Rashi says the house falls halachlo mazalo garam. It's like the fault; it's the mazal of the socher. And the way that goes, Ashri reads that is that the socher's got to pay out the rest of the contract. I actually think that's not pshat in Rashi, but we don't have to worry about that now. And he says v'kasha ma'ishna mehacha. Why should the house falling case be different than the chamor case? In the house falling case, you're paying for 6 months that you didn't live there. In the donkey case, you're strictly paying for the route that you benefited from. You have the same point in the Ritva. The Ritva on Kuf Gimel there quotes his Rebbe, says, Das Rabbeinu, Dehada Arminan Nafal Azda Legabe, Arminan V'chayiv HaSocher Lisfroa HaSchiros, the Socher has to pay out the full Schiros, even for the time he didn't live there. He contrasts that with the Ramban, who says, Vadai ein lo lefro aschar el al mashe darbo. So the Ritva quotes this as machlokas between the Ramban and his own Rebbe. So the question is, how do you explain the difference between the Chamor case and the Bayis case? Does anybody have an example, a suggestion, or regalachas, as to why the cases might be distinguishable? Why in one case you pay out the rest of the contract, in the other case you're only paying for the partial performance? What do you think? Donnie?
Maybe there's a difference between the, like, if you want to put it back into our discussion earlier, the sticks that you have when you own a house versus being just a mosque, being a socher of a donkey.
Yeah, that's really an excellent way of putting it, Donnie. It's exactly what I wanted to get at. There's got to be some conceptual difference between the halacha's conception of being a tenant in a home, leasing a home, and renting a donkey. So how do we explain that? So notice we're here back in the Nesivos. So far the Nesivos is pretty consistent in using this bundle of sticks ideas, these different property incidents. And the Nesivos here writes in Shin Yud Beis Yud Gimel, he poses this problem. Notice he says, by the way, the reason why the tenant has to pay the full term, He cites the Rashba, that's Mitam de Sphir le Schiros le Yoma Memkarhu, right? Schiros is a kind of a sale. Vahave kekon elizman, it's a short term purchase. Dechol onsin chal al hakone, right? The losses, liabilities, the incidence of liabilities usually go with the owner. So if you think that Schiros le Yoma is a Memkar, then the onus is going to fall on the owner. This is a recurring theme that we've seen throughout. Remember, even in Schiras Poelim, if the Poel is considered to be Gufo Kanoi to the Balabayas, an onus of the Poel is considered to fall in the Balabayas' domain. So the Nesivus' first point is to say that generally Schiras is a Mechir Liyome. Once it's a Mechir Liyome, Kola Onsen Archalan Alakona. Okay? But then why in the donkey case do you get a partial discount, right? Why is the onus there split, or you're only paying for half the trip? He says, "Lefi ani azdaiti nir lechalik, divechamor lo shayich lomar, kisha amar ze, dischirus memkarhu." That it's only reasonable to think of a tenant in property as a mechira, but if you're just renting a donkey, then you're not considered to have bought it for a short amount of time. And so he doesn't really explain this. The closest thing he comes to offering an explanation is that he says, in a Chamor Zeh case, the Nevela is Meshubad to the renter. And he thinks that suggests it's Meshubad to the renter to purchase a replacement, and he thinks that suggests that it can't be a relationship of full mechira. He says, "V'chivan dal shibud va'apotiki mefurish imo lo shayich lomar memkarhu rak kipoel sheyesh alav chovas haguftami v'lekach pater habal abayis be'onzin." He doesn't explain it, but he thinks that when it comes to renting a donkey, there's more of just separable Hofeldian obligations that, yeah, you have a right to use it. If it dies, then you have a right to sell off the Nevela to get a replacement. But it doesn't seem right in his mind to view this as a full sale of the property. Masha'en came bibayis zeh de'im nafal azda ve'ein al balabayis shum shibud. Amrinan Shapir de Memkarhu v'chola onsen chal halokeach. See, he doesn't give us the reason, but at least in his good, like, descriptive way, he's saying, you see from the way the halacha treats Schiras Batim that it does function as a kind of a full transfer. Or I guess to use Donnie's phrase, and coming back to a distinction of Hofeld that we haven't really used, there's this, like, in rem, in personam distinction. So when it comes to Mechiras Batim, it's like there's an in rem transfer of property. The tenant is now considered to be the one who's holding all the salient incidents, and so he gets stuck with the onus, including paying for the term that he didn't get to use it. But for Schiras Chamor, it's more just like a contractual in personam transfer where you have certain rights, certain claim rights against the true owner, but not ownership of the thing. And that's why you're not stuck, the renter is not stuck with the onus. Everybody see that distinction? I don't think it's so persuasive the way he doesn't give us good reasons for accepting it. But that, I think, is the distinction that he's driving at. So exactly along the lines that Donnie suggested. Comments on the Nesivus here? Anyone? Cole, you have thoughts on the Nesivus?
No, I do not have thoughts on the Nesivus.
Okay. Anybody else? Noah, yeah, Donnie.
It would be interesting to like pin down what are those
incidents.
Yeah, like because I was trying to think in my head what they could be. It's like not so clear what they would be.
Yeah, yeah.
That might be more of a share on what does it really mean to be a socher and all that.
Exactly,
is what we're dealing.
Yeah. But from what we get from the Nesivus is this important idea that at a certain point, you cross the threshold from just having certain property incidents to being the full kone, right? Like the owner. And once you cross that threshold into being the full owner, then you're stuck with the onsen. Once you get into this world of memkar, or what he calls have ke kone lizman dechol onsen chal al kone, etc. Chol onsen chal al keach, etc. Rameir Simcha offers a different way of distinguishing between the cases. He says, Perish Rashba, V'chena Ritva, B'shit Nukubes B'shem Rabo, Da'af Kol HaSchiros Mikol HaShana, you got to pay out the full term in the Schiros Batim case. Tzarech Litenlo, Da'ave Kilokeach Mekach V'nesra. Because in the Schiros Batim case, you're like somebody who purchased an asset that then got destroyed. And he says, why is it different from the Socher Sachamor case? Look what he says. Hainu mishum. Well, v'had amar b'gemara, Socher Sachamor, meisa b'chatzi aderach, de'enu notzin le'al schar shelo halach. Hainu mishum shelo sachro lizman, shetie knuyelo b'soch zman zeh, lasos melachto, rak sachro le'mokom ploni. Ulemokom acher eno rashai laholicha. Okay. The eno kinuya lo klau. Vidok hete. So what do you think is going on in the Rameir Simcha? I think he's offering a distinction like Donnie suggested, but in a less dogmatic way than the Nesivis did. So what do you think he's getting at? Cole, do you see the Rameir Simcha?
My head's a little out of it, I'm sorry.
No problem. It's always hard to learn when you're in the Rampa. Take a close look at it, Cole. Take a close look at it. Tell me what you think. It's really a very nice distinction of Rameir Simcha.
So these are his chidushim on chats?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not so often that you get like a nice piece. Usually they're from the Rambam, right? But he has a chidushim on shas in Bava Metzia.
Just Bava Metzia?
No. He has a here. I'll since I you know in the library today. Chidushim Meir Simcha on shas.
Did not exist
there. There's a
second.
Itamar, help me out here. So Haidam Yishum. So the reason that he only pays, that he doesn't pay. Excuse me. The second half of the journey. Haidam Yishum Shalos Charo Lizman.
Comma. Yeah. So it's not in the Chamor case, he's thinking, you didn't rent it for the period for all uses, right? For any use of the animal. Rak sachra lemakom ploni. Ulemakom acher eno rashai leholicha. He's thinking that, like, when you hired the donkey in this case, You hired it for the very narrow purpose of getting you from New York to Boston. But the renter has no right to start using it for other trips. He has no right to use it to plow his field. He has no right to use it in the circus. It's a very narrow use right for which it was rented. Contrast that with the Schiras Batim case, where he's thinking that it's like, oh, you're a kone, you know, for all purposes within the term of the lease. So do you see why that matters?
I guess that makes, yeah, if it's if you deviate from the, I mean, even Chachamim, you know, Rameir would be okay with this totally, but even Chachamim would be.
But I don't think it's about deviating. So what he's thinking here, Donnie, you want to take? Anybody else want to take a stab at this to try to weigh in, see what Rameir Simcha is saying? It's really a nice piece. You could read it through for a moment. Yeah, you want to take a stab at it, or?
Yeah, I guess you would say that, you know, the incident of ownership involved here is the ability to designate any kind of work, and as long as you don't have the liberty to use it however you want, you can't meaningfully be said to own it.
That's right. I think what he's saying is that whether we view the schirus as a hakna gemura liyome, and therefore whether you'll be stuck with the onus depends on whether you have a very limited, narrow ownership incident, meaning you have a limited use right for a specific task, in which case you're not the owner. You hold a very thin twig in the bundle of rights, right? You have a very tenuous connection to this object. That tenuous property right is not enough to say that you're the owner and therefore should be stuck with the onsen. So if you rent the chamor to get you to Boston, you're holding on to a twig. You're not chayv in onsen. You're not the owner. But if you hire the chamor, say, I'm renting your donkey. I could use it for whatever I want within the period. I could sublet it. I could use it to plow. I could use it in the circus. I could travel. I could do whatever I want to do with it. Then you're holding onto a lot of sticks in the bundle because you have so many different kinds of use rights. Then you're considered to be the kone. Then you're going to be stuck with the onus. Does everybody see
you
that?
You have a threshold. Okay, I now understand what he's saying. You have a bit of a I don't see how this quantitative difference could spit out that qualitative difference.
Okay, I think whether he's
why would the I don't want to be vague about it. Why would the totality of the breadth of the task for which you hired the donkey have anything to do with the degree to which you're liable for force majeure? I would rather say that we should be contextual about it. If you're riding along the if you hired it to ride and you lent it to the circus, and the circus breaks its leg, you're liable. If you rented it for the circus, and it breaks its leg in the circus, you're not. But I don't see why... Yeah.
So we're not talking about cases where there was improper use, right? We're talking about you hired the animal to take you to Boston, and it dies in Rhode Island.
Right? I'm saying, he's thinking the improper use analysis is a good metric for deciding between liability in cases where the terms of use are differently, variously broad. But here, I don't see what the relation is.
Because he's thinking that, to use Donnie's point earlier, the person who's stuck with the onus is always the owner, right? And then he's saying,
"Come on, you're a reductionist. You don't believe. You don't even believe there's an owner."
Right. I'm just using the Nassivus' paradigm. And then he's saying, "How do we determine ownership? Well, it's going to be based on the party who holds on, I guess, to the substantial collection of rights."
You're an anti-stick theorist in stick theorist's clothing.
Yeah, I actually think that about Honoré a little bit. If you read the
But you see what you just did there. You're like you're all in favor. You go squishy.
But Donnie, that's what Donnie was saying earlier, right? I mean, it's not clear to what extent
that's correct.
All you have is sticks,
all the way down, right?
Is it that all you have are sticks of ownership, or sticks are ways of figuring out, where the ownership is? And I think you're right, Cole. You're right to say that the Nassivus here is doing the latter thing. He's using the sticks to try to figure out who's the owner, and therefore stuck with the owner.
Not Rav Meir Simcha.
Sorry, yeah, the Rav Meir Simcha, I'm sorry. This is what Rav Meir Simcha is doing. He's using the sticks to figure out who the owner is. This is in contrast to the Nassivus we saw right at the beginning of this Chabura, when we were discussing about the Angarya Sugya, where the Nassivus said, who bears the onus will be a function of whether the onus hit the stick associated with the socher, right, the use right, or the stick associated with the maskir, the actual entity of the animal. Right, so I agree. These are two different ways of using the stick theory. The Nassivus in the earlier point was using it, not the Nassivus we just saw, but the Nassivus at the beginning of the Chabura, which distinguished between the use right versus the entity, was using just if the onus hits stick A, then owner A gets stuck with it. If it hits stick B, then owner B gets stuck with it. Rav Meir Simcha is using the stick theory as a way of pinning down who the owner is, and he thinks if you have limited use rights, then you're not the owner. It can't be a Kenyan Lisman. If you have a robust array of use rights or sticks in the bundle, then you're the owner and you're stuck with the onus. It's a very Lumdish Rameir Simcha. I mean, I think Cole's point, there's a problem here, but it's a very nice distinction.
It was a very Lumdish thing you said. I don't know if Rameir Simcha would be, I don't know.
No, you don't
think... I just read it again. I don't care what... As somebody once said to me, and maybe I took it too seriously, the text isn't that important. But, I don't really... okay, whatever. No, it's a good...
Must have been Stanley Fish who told you that.
No, it was somebody else. I don't know who Stanley Fish is.
Is there a text in this class?
Who? Okay, anyway. Whatever. It's a good thought. Okay, it's wrong. Fine. You can't get,
Does everyone else think that I'm not reading this from Meir Simcha correctly? What do you guys think?
I don't care about that. You're reading it correctly. I'm happy to agree with every reading with everything.
Except
for a Rambam.
I'm just gonna because Cole still has a Rambam fetish. I'll have to work on that. I'll just read the Rameir Simcha to try to motivate that this is what he's saying. He says, first of all, when he says the reason why in general you have to pay for the rest of the rent term is because tzarech litein lo dehava kilokeach mekach v'nisraf, right? It's like you bought a property and it got burned. That's the reason why you'd have to pay out the rest of the term. And then he says, what do you do about the chamor case? He says, oh, the chamor case is different. Because haina mishum shelo sachar lizman shetehe knuya lo betoch hazman. Haina mishum shelo sachar lizman shetehe knuya lo besoch zman zeh lasos b'melachto. You didn't rent the donkey to do all your melachos. Rak sachra lemakrom ploni. You just leased it to take you specifically to a particular place, to Boston. Ulemakrom acher yina rasha leholicho. And evidence of your extremely limited use right is the fact that you can't even take it to travel somewhere else. And therefore, eina knuya lo klal. Right? And Cole, you see, he even says vidok hetev, telling you that there's some really profound lumdish point here
It's like when the Rambam says, understand this, then you know he's saying what Strauss will say 1,000 years later.
Right. Let me make one final shita. So we have two lumdish distinctions between the bias case and the chamor case. For the nesivis, he just thinks that one is like a hakna and one isn't. Doesn't really flesh out the reasons. Rameir Simcha thinks it's not a fundamental distinction between bias and chamor. It's just that he's thinking in the bias case, you happen to lease the home for, full use rights or a broader array of property incidents. Whereas in the chamor case, you happen to have leased it for the narrow right of traveling somewhere. The Chazon Ish in Bava Kamma Siman Chav Gimel Sif Yud has a different answer to this question. He says, V'od kasha mehadam ra'ayin tasim b'alef b'sachar chamor meisa b'chatzi aderech notzen lo schar chatzi aderech v'lama lo amrinan schiros liyoma memchar hu v'yishalem kol haschiros. Right, why don't we say in the chamor case that you got to pay for the whole ride because it's a memkar and the owner gets stuck with the onsen. V'hasa mashma de'en ba'al chamor yimal halicha, fine. He says v'efshar, here's the Chazon Ish's answer, very uncompelling answer. V'efshar de'hasam arisha chamor haya chalash Shahare Amar Digeshlo Alav Taromes. Venehidlo Khashiv Mum Mikomakam Lonis Chaya Bukhalas Chiros. The Chazon Ish is thinking that there was actually some breach by the owner of the Chamor for initially selling a sick donkey. He's saying that there was almost like this mum of the animal not being able to make it to Boston was there when you initially hired it. And so it's that breach of the owner that explains why he doesn't get compensated for the rest of the schiros. So this is it's a difficult Chazon Ish, first of all, because he reads that into the sugya, which isn't really there. But he bites the bullet in conceding the idea that in a Hanami, assuming there was no breach by the balabais, then by the owner of the chamor, then the renter would have to pay for the entire route to Boston, even though the animal broke down in Rhode Island. Right? So he's thinking, yes, schiros maybe is fundamentally a mechira. The person who bought who rented the item would get stuck with the onus because he's the owner, unless there was some breach, some sort of quasi mekachtaos from the owner, in that the animal was sick from the outset. Really, a surprising suggestion from the Chazanish. Anybody have thoughts on this Chazanish idea?
Thoughts? Only Tosfos gets to make ukimtas like that.
Wow. Yeah, only Tosfos. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like the famous or the apocryphal exchange, supposedly, between the Briskers and the Chazanish. You know, Chazanish supposedly said that, Talmidim Chazanish said that, you know, when Reb Chaim published Chiddush Rabbeinu Chaim Alevi, it's like, oh, I thought Rabbeinu was reserved for the Rishonim, right? And then they responded, oh, we thought that the appellation of Chazon was reserved for Nevi.
Reserved for Nevi.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess the Chaznish here is asserting his right to make these wild ukimtas. But notice he's assuming, I think, like the original Nesivis, that if you're the renter, and therefore you own this kind of right of usage, you bought it, it's like you get stuck with the onsen that hit that incident, that hit that stick in the bundle that you purchased. Chaznish is assuming that point, and he's conceding it, and he's saying the only reason here for getting a reduction on the second half of the journey, a discount for that half, is the fact that this is a quasi-mekachtaos argument. All right, good. That's what I wanted to cover for today. That's this sugya of chamor shemeis b'chatzi aderech. We get a few important principles that emerge from the discussion. We get at least the presumption in the Gemara that you got to pay for half the trip. This seems to be associated with the idea of Hana, at least according to the Balei Tosfos. The Rambam disagrees. This also raises the important discussion of whether we view Schiros as a full transfer of a property right, in which case the Ones should follow ownership. But we also get this more nuanced discussion about whether it's proper to conceive of these different schiros relationships as being defined by the specification of the individual property incidents. Okay, that's our discussion of chamor shemeis. I think it makes sense just to hold off till next chabura and cover hasocher asasvina v'tava b'chatzi aderech in the next chabura. Very difficult sugya. I think we could just spend one chabura on it to nail down. What's really important for our purposes is the idea that the person who's stuck with the loss is the person who's preventing the performance. We saw this sugya alluded to in a lot of the Rishonim. Does that sound like a good plan? Yeah? Okay, let me just give you a brief 30 seconds here, what I think the plan going forward is. So I want to, in the next, basically the next five issues that I want to cover over Junesman, maybe we could go a little past that, depending if people are willing to go past that, but we'll see. I want to cover the Sfina case. That's the Chabura right after Shavuos. Then I want to talk a little bit about Makas Medina. Right, this pandemic question. If everyone's affected, how does that reapportion the usual rules of loss allocation? Then Achilas Poalim, the Zchus of a Poel to eat from the Balabayas while he's working for him. Then Biyomo Titein Scharo. Those are the four major things I want to cover, paying the worker on time. And then maybe if we have time, we'll do like a chabura on the choshen mishpat obligations of the poel encroaching on his orachayim chiyuvim. All right?
Itamar, have you given any thought to next year? Are we thinking Hashoah?
Yeah, I'm thinking of doing Shomrim. I have to figure out, it's definitely going to be Shomrim sugyas. I want to talk about Shoel, Pikadon, Schiris Batim in Karkos. I just have to figure out the best way of going about doing it. Like where exactly to start from and what to hold for later. I want to do like a lot of Mashkunos discussion also.
Shchunos? Will the Chabura be listed as like Hilchos Shabbos or Velos the next year?
No, that'd actually,
fantastic shtick.
We got carte blanche authority to learn what we want to learn. So I told them we're probably going to be doing Bar Mitzvah.
You should tell them the halacha libudim. I think that's great shtick. Yeah.
Well, you guys all get chulin credit if you want.
Bye.
Okay, everyone, take care. Cool. Go. Make sure you do a good rendition of Yishalayim Shel Zahav. All right, everyone. Yasher Koach.